Hello, and welcome to the Rev Them Rule of Law podcast. My name is Oliver Garner. Our guest today is Athul Aguia Aguilar. She is Professor of Political Science in the Department of Sociopolitical and Legal Studies at ITESCO, the Jesuit University of Guadalajara. Her research focuses on comparative judicial politics and democratization processes. Today, we will be discussing these dynamics in contemporary Mexico. Athul, thank you for joining the podcast today.
Oliver, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here and share with you all what is happening currently in Mexico with the judiciary. Thank you.
Great. We're looking forward to the conversation. So you've recently published a working paper for the CEU Democracy Institute on the subversion of judicial legitimacy in Mexico by presidential rhetoric. Could you summarize this phenomenon for our listeners who may not be familiar with the political context in Mexico?
Sure. One of the things I wanted to make with this work I'm conducting currently, it's to explore how the dynamics of attacks from the president to the judiciary are like evolving, and what are the causes or the conditions and when and the timing also of these attacks, rhetorical attacks to the judiciary. I wanted to explore this because the judiciary, as all we know, is a very important institution in presidential and in constitutional democracies, because they guarantee the separation of powers and check and balances. So I wanted to study this and put it into a research program, because I started to look since the arrival of Andrés Manuel López Obrador, our current president, in 2018, we have seen variations in the relation about how the president refers to the judges, the judges and constitutional judges in the judiciary. So I start in my discussion in this working paper, departing from the 1994 judicial reform. This reform is very important for us because it radically transformed the performance of the judiciary currently. The 1994 reform, what it did is that introduced judicial independence for the court, but also introduced a professional system of judges, like a judicial career. But the most important change in this reform was that it empowered the court. How it empowered it, created one mechanism that is called constitutional actions, that is a mechanism of judicial review that allowed the court to review the legislation of both the executive and the legislative branch in Mexico, but also to decide through another mechanism that is called amparo, the rights that are being contested by society because they think some authority acts are violating or breaching their rights. So this reform was crucial and transform it radically how the play between the court, the judiciary, and the other branches of governments were working. So when a populist with autocratic tendencies come to power, this starts to produce a new relation between these institutions. And for instance, several legislations introduced by the president and his party has been contested either by the opposition in the government, either by society, because these groups find that this new legislation is breaching or the constitution or rights, human rights or liberal rights. So the opposition and society in several cases have gone to the Supreme Court in order to ask the revision, the judicial revision of this legislation or these authority acts. And the Supreme Court has, in many cases, give the reason to the opposition or the citizens that go to the court and declare the unconstitutionality of those laws approved by the president and his party. So this, as you can see, if you take a look into my paper, you can see that in this moment, when the decision of the courts come, the president and his party start to attack rhetorically the court, saying that judges are part of a conservative group, saying that judges are a privileged elite, saying that judges are undermining democratic principles, saying that judges are deciding against the people. So these all attacks have been like a study in the judicial politics literature as a first step to erode the legitimacy of the judiciary and try in the future to subvert it. So that's why I wanted to go in the study of these changes of relationship. And we can see that since the Andrés Manuel government started in 2018, the attacks against the court have increased not only in number, but also in intensity. No, until recently, they are acquiring a new shape. These attacks are acquiring a new shape. It is that the president, for instance, recently presented a reform to radically transform the judiciary and the Supreme Court.
Thank you very much for that historical overview and this point of controversy that Mexico now finds itself in. So why do you think that the president and the ruling party have been so critical of the judiciary? Can any of their grievances about impartiality and independence be supported by evidence? Or is the whole basis for the criticism dislike it having constraints placed on executive power?
Well, they have been critical because judicial decisions are not favoring his political project. This is the most important. You can see it on my paper. The president doesn't attack the judiciary just because he wants to attack it in a moment without no context. All the context that we have is that when a decision comes, for instance, there was this contested law regarding the electoral system in Mexico that the opposition find will break our most independent electoral body that is in charge of organizing elections. And they contested this decision in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court gave the reason to the opposition. And in these type of moments is when you see that the president and his party come out and say that the court is, his judges are protecting conservative rights, for instance, right? So in my analysis, what one can trace these attacks on the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, they increase as the decisions of the Supreme Court goes against the executive and his preferred laws. Now, accusation about the independence of judges and the impartiality do not have empirical evidence. We have, however, other empirical evidence that are correct. And when we talk, for instance, about nepotism within the judiciary, we cannot dare say there is no evidence, because actually in 2018, we have a very true analysis of how there is this nepotist or clientelar network within the judiciary, something that is like working against the independence of the judiciary, but also working against his current legitimacy before the public, right? So the evidence we have so far is about nepotism, but not about lacking independence, because the court, as was reformed in 1984, acquired several mechanisms that isolated from the political power until certain point, That is, judges are nominated by in different moments. Justices to the Supreme Court are not nominated only by one party. We have there judges from the PRI who were nominated by a president of the PRI, were nominated by a pan president, and were nominated actually by Andres Manuel in his party in this section. So we cannot say that this Supreme Court is dependent on political reasons or has political motivations to depend on one or only one party. They are very varied, come from different backgrounds. Some of them are very recognized justices, and others have judicial career. So as a matter of fact, we have, for the first time recently, Andres Manuel AMLO nominated a very political profile to the Supreme Court. But I would say that it is.
It's interesting to hear that there are points upon which the judiciary could be criticized. You mentioned nepotism, but probably not to the extent that has been evident in the rhetoric. And you've provided some background on the 1994 reforms as a starting point. But why do you think that these dynamics of judicial subversion are occurring in Mexico? Is it a product of the tradition of electoral authoritarianism, or do you think that other factors are more important?
Well, these new dynamics that we are seeing, these attacks and this new relationship between the executive and the judiciary, I think they are occurring because we are beginning to experiment for the first time in our political life the separation of powers and the check and balances. This is something that we already have in our constitution since our independence, but from the history of our country, we cannot say that these de jure measures were working in de facto. So for the first time, we have political competence, we have different parties, and these parties are really using the legal mechanisms they have to dispute political power. So if they want to they want to dispute a law introduced by the president's party, they have now the channel, and they know that the 1994 reform granted independence to the court, and that the court might decide freely, independently, and in the line of what is according to the law, but also according to what is happening in our context. This is something that is also becoming very, very regular in our Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is not different to the past. It's not only deciding according to the law, but also according to the context, to the democratic context, to the human rights context, to the problems that we have with criminal organizations, et cetera. So I think that we are also experiencing this dynamic because we have, I think for the first time in our short democratic period, populists with autocratic tendencies in power. So an autocrat that doesn't like to be controlled or supervised by other institution, I think is another very important factor to start to see these new dynamics. Andrés Manuel likes to govern, as he himself has said many times, with the people, right? He likes to govern with the people, and he doesn't like to be questioned in his policy by other powers, especially powers that he claims are not democratically elected. So I think this is also very important, and we can trace comparisons with other countries in this last part. No, in this last part, that we are like, as we see the rise of autocratic leaders or populist leaders, we begin to see some of these changes in the separation and check and balances logic that they cannot understand, and they absolutely do not share.
It's intriguing to consider that these irritations could occur as teething problems from trying to put law into action, law that was on paper in the Constitution, but then when you try and put it into practice, these problems can occur. And you mentioned in your response to the first question that there's been a recent reform proposed by the government for judges to be appointed through popular elections. Do you think that such a proposal could have any viability at all? Or do you think that it would completely undermine the independence of the judiciary by emphasizing the competitive logic of electoral politics over the criteria of legal expertise?
Oh, this is a really important question in the current moment, because we just received this proposal. Before, there were just attacks. In my paper, you can see just the rhetorical attacks, but this is something that departs from rhetorical attacks. This is not more anymore talking about we are going to reform the judiciary because the judiciary is a conservative group. They recently proposed a reform in the Chamber of Deputies to introduce popular election of not only justices, but also all judges, district, circuit court judges, electoral judges, but also those judges that sit in the judicial council, that is the governance body that organize the internal dynamics or organize the internal structure of the judiciary. So first, let's tackle the first question you have. This reform cannot be approved in this term because Andrés Manuel doesn't have the majority to do so. I mean, he needs a constitutional reform. However, as you may know, his party is currently one of the most popular parties in Mexico, and we are having elections this year in June. So it is highly probable that his appointee, the president, the candidate of Morena, will win the election. So if this happens and they also win the chambers and have the majority in both of them, then we can see a reform in this direction, because the candidate has already commented that she will follow the reform as it is, because she really agrees with the judiciary that the judiciary should be transformed and judges must be popularly elected. So this is the scenario now. They do not have the power now, but they might have it after next election. We hope they don't. Elections are going to be very competitive, especially in the legislative branch. They're going to be very competitive, and we are like expecting a divided government, not expecting. Wanting, deciding, deciding a divided government so that this type of proposal cannot go through. Now, his proposal is a complete regression in judicial matters. It will absolutely destroy two things that have been constructed in the past 30 years since the 1994 reform, that is judicial independence and judicial career. Currently, we have this type of decisions, like the court deciding against the preference of the political elite because they are independent, they cannot be dismissed, and they have like a secure tenure in their positions. Judges can be there for 15 years and cannot be reelected. Cannot be reappointed. They leave, and they can only leave if they have like this. They can only be dismissed if they breach the constitution. They are like in real trouble, right? This is something that will change with a popular election. Because popular election, I will say that now. At first, I want to come back to the professionalization. This is also something that is important, crucially important, because before the judiciary, our judiciary was constructed of people who was the friend of someone,
sure,
right? judges and magistrates are currently the result of judicial career. Nepotism in the judiciary currently is only and especially developed in the lower echelons of the judiciary, but not in those two positions that are the two most important positions of the judicial career. Here, judges have been subjected to different exams, different merit systems that allows us to have a professional judiciary. This is something that will disappear with elections of judges, popular election of judges, right? So I wanted to talk about it because most of the people doesn't think that judges are currently already for 30 years following a career, something that makes people an expert to be in a position as deciding what is the right that assists you or what is the right that does not assist you. So his reform is to elect these justices, Supreme Court judges, electoral judges, by vote. And how you are going to have that? Well, first of all, you don't have any more a tenure of 15 years. You will have only 6 years to be in that position. Elections are going to happen at the same time of national elections. So this is another problem because they are going to be very linked to the parties, to the competition, and to the political competition. But the worst is that this reform is proposing that candidates for judges and justices are going to be, for justices, especially for justices, are going to be proposed by the executive, by the legislative, and by the Supreme Court. These three institutions are going to propose 10 candidates each that can run in elections, and the best and the, who has the majority of votes, those who has the majority of votes are going to sit in the Supreme Court. So, and this is a process that we were talking yesterday at my university politicizes the judiciary a lot. We were speaking of this experience at the light of the Bolivian experience, who already select judges by popular election. And we were seeing how these, what are the effects that this type of system has in democracy, but also in the political system. So I will say that we cannot have anything good out of a reform that seeks to introduce elections to have our justices and our judges to sit in the Supreme Court or any other court. Now, I would like to talk also about the nomination process that we have now, because we have problems, as we can see it in other countries. In Mexico, the justices are selected by a third majority of the Senate by a proposal of the executive. So this politicizes a lot and concentrates the decision in one actor. For instance, if the president's party has the majority in the Senate, as happened in many cases. For instance, in the case of Donald Trump in the US, he could nominate several judges and change the balance of power in the Supreme Court. Well, that happened also here in Mexico, happens in Brazil, happens in most Latin American countries, and I believe also in Central European countries. And this is a problem. It's a problem because you are also politicizing this body that should be like the one who has the impartiality to decide between two political poles. So what we are thinking now is that, yes, we need to reform the Supreme Court nomination process, but not by electing judges. Instead, it will be better if we can include different actors in the nomination process. not only the Senate and the executive, but also a body that can control, for instance, the Judicial Council, that can control who is nominated to occupy a position in the Supreme Court. Currently in Mexico, it's the president who decides who is going to be sent to the Senate. And the Senate has to decide with three profiles that no profile is a good profile. And after a second rejection of the Senate, the president can decide by himself who sits in the court. So that's what happened in the last nomination. The president decided because the Senate rejected twice the I don't know the name in English, but these three people that sent to be selected by the Senate. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to consider, especially for RevDem, the problems that can arise from an overabundance of democracy in inappropriate areas. So we'll definitely look to follow the results of the election very closely. And for our final question, I thought I'd focus on issues that are closer to Central Europe that you mentioned in your final answer. And of course, we've seen in Hungary and particularly Poland that there have also been processes of democratic erosion involving rhetorical attacks on the judiciary, and indeed also reorganization of the judiciary and the system of appointments. Do you think there's any evidence of exchange and influence between South America and Central Europe in these matters? And do you think that Poland under Donald Tusk could provide a model for the reversal of erosion in Mexico?
That's very interesting questions. Not sure about that there is an exchange between those regions, but what we can clearly identify is that are patterns of comparison between them, between these two geographical areas that have and share similarities in several important aspects. For instance, transitions to democracy in the third wave, judicial reforms that transforming the power and the independence of the judiciaries and professionalize it, and also democratic dissatisfaction among citizens with democratic outcomes. I will point also that we share that we elect in democratic elections populists with autocratic tendencies. And this also follows that we are facing several attacks in the judiciary, but especially I will say that the cases of Hungary and Poland are very significant for the Latin American region because they show how also undermined the independence of the judiciary. Judicial independence was totally subverted under Orban and under the Kaczynski brothers. And that's, I think this is served as a playbook for other autocrats in our region, such as Bukele, and maybe Bolsonaro also we can point at, but I think Bukele is the most important case there because he learned it very quickly as Orban and the Kaczynski brothers did, what to do with the court once they got the majority in the chambers, in the legislative, in the parliament, right? And this is something that Bukele did very well in the same line as these people in Hungary and Poland. So I think we can share these points of comparison and can help us to illuminate what is coming and also to illuminate how, and talking your second questions, how can we reverse that, right? Now, that second question is a little bit more complicated to respond because it will take place in the future, but let's think about something that is very clear so far. Building judicial independence is difficult to achieve. Dismantling autocratic reforms that undermine judicial independence is even more difficult, right? So it's not easy when a Democrat comes in the executive and wants to reintroduce judicial independence and professionalization and guarantees on impartiality in the judiciary, because it has to face not only the political elite that is still there. No, our, as you might be, as you should know, Tusk, but also Bukele are competing, but they are not winning like with a huge majority. No, mm-hmm. Bolsonaro lost the presidency with a very narrow margin, as did Donald Trump. So when elites come, maybe there are not going to be complete political elites are not going to be completely committed. Or even worse, judicial elites who were nominated previously by autocratic leaders are gonna defend not to advance in granting again power and independence to the courts, to the justice system. I just want to recall what happened, for instance, currently in Guatemala. Guatemala is a very important example because we have elected, and they have elected a new president who is very progressive and is something very different from the past political elite in Guatemala, who undermined the judiciary and the other institutions in the justice system. Well, now he's facing, he wants to introduce reform, but he has not the majority, but also he's facing the prosecution of institutions that were previously independent, were subverted, and now are he's facing like these independent bodies, but fill it only with autocratic profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very important to have in mind, and to have, like, for instance, all the problems that Tusk might find in wanting to reintroduce guarantees of political independence for the judiciary in Poland.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that fascinating example, and thank you for such an interesting conversation today, Ethel. I would encourage our listeners and readers to follow RevThem on LinkedIn, X, Facebook, and Instagram for further conversations on these topics in the future. Thank you so much again, Ethel.
Thank you very much, Oliver, and have a nice evening.